patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
All right. Welcome to episode 203 of the Long Toss here on the walk-off. Our now, once again, weekly two-hour live decompression of what we just witnessed. All right. Joined as always by Scott Belford. Scott, how you doing?
Oh, all right. I drove back from Spruce Grove today to Calgary and listened to the game on the radio. Rarely am I ever as pleased to not be watching the shit show go down as I was today. But yeah, good.
It was a rough one. Jen, nice to see you. How you doing?
I'm mostly here because Garth promised an overreaction if the Jays started the season 1-3.
So that's why I'm here.
That's why we're all here.
All right. Well, then let's move to Garth. Garth, give us a taste of that overreaction, buddy.
I don't even like, can you overreact when you sign a guy for 3 years for over $60 million and his first two pitches get like fucking crushed?
Makes you miss Yusei Kikuchi, doesn't it?
Oh man.
Can we all agree that we're really looking forward to Yusei's start
at this point?
Yeah, legit.
Seriously.
I am.
Yeah. I mean, we got two more question mark starts ahead of us with Barrios and Kikuchi. I don't know what to expect games coming up. Connor, how you doing, buddy?
Good. I've obviously been better, but I support two teams now and my other team won today. So that's cool, I guess. Sure. but yeah, that was not fun. That was not a fun watch.
Well, it's over now. The good news is it's over now. All right. So we got a lot to talk about today. We're going to recap that first series that was, we're going to touch on Bo Bichette defensive struggles. Day three of the season, and we're already on that topic, so that's cool, I guess. Manoa, temperature check. We have some reasons to maybe be concerned, maybe some people to put our mind at ease, but we'll get into that. We're going to talk second base position for the Blue Jays, that merry-go-round at second base. No pun intended with the Whit Merrifield reference there. Look at me. I'm better than I thought. Gotcha. We're going to touch on the AL East in general and how everybody's feeling about this new look baseball. Pitch clock, base stealing is up, get into all that. Let's just dive right in then. The season opened with one of the better season openers that I can remember from an entertainment standpoint.
If you're into that sort of thing.
Hey, you know what? As long as the good guys win, I'm into it. So let's just go around. How did everybody feel broad strokes on the opening weekend, Scott?
Well, this is not how you get all sort of interaction and stuff, because this is not a hot take at all. But honestly, taking any three games at any point in the season and reading too much into it is kind of a act in lunacy. And to do it for the first three games is even a little crazier. Was it good baseball? No. Was it what the Jays have been preaching all offseason, that their new mantra is attention to detail? No. Did the outfield look better than it did last year? I mean, yeah, there were definitely glimpses of some amazing defense out there, and that was definitely a bright spot over the weekend. I don't know.
Connor, go ahead.
Hitting was good, I'd say. Like, I'd say the majority of the time the hitting was good. The pitching leaves a lot to be desired. It's the first weekend of the season, so you can't really take too much into it. And I already see people getting on John Schneider for some decisions that he's made. But it's just, it's the three games in. John Schneider's, it's his first real opening test. I mean, he was there for half a season, but it's his real first opening test of being a manager for a full season. So it's the ups and downs of a baseball season, really.
Jen, what are your thoughts on this? Are you, I mean, like, let's put it in perspective. The Cardinals are a really good team.
Yeah.
It was a series on the road.
That was a point that I was going to make, was that playing against a really good team on the road, can you really expect them to sweep? Probably not, right? One and two, again, so Scott, is absolutely correct, right? And it is a, you know, frigid cold take, but you can't take a three-game sample and make anything out of it at any point in the season, right? I think if you wanted to say that there was a concern, it's just that the pitching didn't look good, right? The starting pitching did not look good, and the bullpen, particularly in that home opener, really did not look, or not home opener, sorry, opening day, did not look good, right? And so you just, when that carries over, or when that was one of the big complaints from last year and it's carrying over already in the first three games, I can see why some people might already be, you know. Mm-hmm.
I mean, if there is one time in the season for the pitching to not be on its game, I do feel like the beginning of the season does make sense, especially if you go back a few years and spring training was what, 10 days longer than it is right now? You know, like, it was definitely concerning, you know, because you already, as a Jays fan, you have worries about Kikuchi, you have worries about Berríos, and then to see Bassett get hit so hard in his first appearance with the Jays. I mean, he did not allow this many runs the entire season last year in any game with the Mets. So, I mean, I guess that's a bright spot, right? That this is a bit of an anomaly for him.
And you'd like to assume that that's exactly what it is, right? Is that it was just an anomaly. It's, you know, the start of the season. Better things are to be expected, you would think. I'll be completely honest. I know it's really easy for me to say this after the fact. And the reason why I don't say a lot of these things on social media is because I don't need some idiot tagging a player and starting up a little bit of a storm. I just don't need that in my life. So I keep certain things to myself. I would not have given Alek Manoah the opening day start, to be completely honest. Not the young dude, not the dude who had the terrible outing in the wild card game last season. I understand as a manager, you might want to show faith in your young guy. You know, he's your bulldog, and that's maybe what you're trying to do. But when you do have a veteran pitcher in Kevin Gausman, right, I just, to me, that, and I'm not getting on Schneider for it, it's just not the decision that I personally would have made. But I know some dipshit would have tagged Manoah, and Manoah would have replied, and I keep these things to myself.
Yeah.
Garth?
I didn't have a problem starting Manoah. He's going to be the face of that rotation for the next decade. He's going to have plenty of these. I don't see a problem with it. Like, his first game ever, they threw him out at Yankee Stadium. You know, like, I don't think nerves are an issue with Manoah. I mean, it just, I just don't. I don't, he gets angry or whatever. I don't see emotions really affect Alek Manoah on the mound. Did he pitch great? No, he had a kind of a shitty off day, but kept the Jays in it. You know, he didn't have a Bassett start. You know, like, the game wasn't over two pitches into the game, so I don't have a problem with that. Bassett showed today. Okay, it's the first game, or it's early, blah, blah, blah. That was a concerning start. Like, he didn't just get, like, sort of beat up. He got crushed. Even the singles were hard hit. Like, Jamie and Joe were talking about, he's the king of soft contact before the game started. and I did not see any soft contact at all. Like none. Every ball that they hit, they crushed. And it did not, that's a concerning look for a guy you just spent $60 million plus on. So
Keegan Matheson on Twitter tweeted out a quote from Chris Bassett, and it said, "I'm a little bit at a loss for words." We all are, Chris. I've never had a game like this where six different pitches were getting hit this hard. And that is the one thing about Chris Bassett that was kind of really highlighted when the Jays brought him in, right? Is that he has a huge amount of pitches in comparison to most starting pitchers. But when they're all getting hit, what does it matter how many you have?
You can take a quote from Garth Orji on Twitter. Like today I tweeted like Bassett, "Hey, I have eight pitches." And I'm like, well, pick three. You know, like I don't need eight shitty pitches. Give me three that, you know, aren't going to get hammered into the stands.
Well, and like, it's interesting when they said on the broadcast that he has to basically call his own game.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have time with the pitch clock to just shake off the catcher.
He looked so awkward today. He looked awkward, and he did not look in sync with Jansen. He didn't look in sync with himself. Like he just didn't look good. Like he has to get this pitch clock thing sorted out. Whether he goes from a 8-pitch pitcher to a 6-pitch pitcher, or I don't know, but.
I think that's a big one, Garth. I think you're really hitting the nail on the head here with the pitch clock, because I know we saw the same thing to a lesser extent, but Alek Manoah didn't look comfortable on the mound the whole time he was pitching as well. And it felt the same way, right? That he felt maybe a little rushed and he was trying to get the pitch calm going and all of that sort of thing. Yeah. So yeah, there are some kinks to work out.
We need to sort that shit out before it becomes an ongoing problem. And like today, like Bassett just did not look good on the mound at all, except for the second inning.
And it would be nice if he could hit something harder than, you know, or faster than 91.
Yeah. Well, like it just didn't seem like any of his like, oh, he's got a sweeper now and he has this pitch now. And none of them seem to be doing what they're supposed to do. And yeah, it wasn't a good look. And I'm sure he's probably, him and Pete Walker are going to spend half the night mulling over what happened. And
yeah,
but I think pitch clock, he needs to figure it out. They need to find a way to get that like call in faster. Yeah.
So we'll welcome Lewis in just a second here. First, I do wish to go to chat and just kind of, give the temperature check of everyone here. Scott Carter says, "I am always worried. It is my default position with the Jays." Michelle Marie Beer says, "It's funny. The person I'm least worried about in this rotation is Kikuchi." That is funny.
What a difference the season makes.
Seriously. Right?
What a difference Jordan spring training makes.
Jordan N says, "Absolutely disgraceful start by Bassett." So, yeah. There's a,
but I mean, it's just showing how short all of our memories are. Like, Berríos got really lit up last year on opening day.
You got one out.
You got one out.
Oh, I was there. I remember it.
But I mean, that set the tone for Berríos' year. So, I don't know.
This reminds me of an old expression of anybody who's not afraid of bears hasn't ever seen a bear before. Yeah. And that's how I feel about this. Yusei Kikuchi doesn't stress me out. Like, we just haven't seen him yet. Like, we've seen everybody else, and everybody's giving us a heart attack right now. Yusei Kikuchi will have plenty of chance to give us a panic attack.
The second he walks somebody, it's panic central.
Lewis. All right. Let's welcome Lewis. Late joiner. He was out there busy being handsome as ever. How you doing, Lewis?
I'm doing good. So sorry I couldn't get in. My Zoom kept crashing trying to log in, but glad to be here. Sorry about that.
That's right. Young people, good, they buddy. Struggle with technology from time to time. Good to see. We're just doing a weekend recap, Lewis, and a quick temperature check, broad strokes on how you're feeling about this Cardinals series, and then we're gonna move on from there. But we'll end with you. How are you feeling about this?
I'm not feeling too good. the rotation's obviously not in the greatest spot ever. And it was certainly a question going into the season, you know, how Bass is going to hold up. Gausman, you know, the luck is just never on his side. And Manoah, his second big game in a row, and he just still hasn't shown up there yet. But the offense is still really good. Like, their play discipline has been amazing. You're just waiting to see the power. And I think the Cardinals have clearly shown themselves as a serious contender. And they're going to have probably the best. Those are the two best offenses in baseball right there. It's a shame our starting rotation can support them in that effort to try and at least win this series. But I'm feeling pretty good about Kansas City. I don't know why I feel good about Yusei Kikuchi. That's it's a strange feeling, but I'm excited for Kansas City to see what they can do. Barrios, see if he can spark some beat up on the Central Division, you know, try and get back to that. But yeah, I certainly have my doubts about the rotation going into the year, especially.
Did Bassett start today concern you, Lewis?
I mean, I don't think I've ever seen that much hard contact being given up. Like, that was insane. And first pitch, 89 fastball is like, oh my God, that was a fastball. And I don't know, nothing was right except that second inning. Nothing was right.
Like, it was getting hit so hard that we were literally getting messaged on Twitter by people being like, you guys talked last year when they first brought pitch come in that, like, sometimes it could get too loud and the batter could actually hear it. Is that happening? I'm like, it better not be after like a year of using this thing, but it looked like that. Like, that's how hard he was getting hit.
They're on everything. And he throws eight things and each one of them was just getting rocked.
All right, Lewis, you touched on for the second big game in a row for Alek Manoah, kind of got roughed up, to put it nicely. I'm going to put this out to everyone. This is something that I'm trying to not put out into the universe, but I also can't ignore the elephant in the room. Like, the question that is chewing at the back of my mind of, like, is he maybe not a big game pitcher? And now the immediate response is like, no, don't say that. But, like, is anybody else even like 5% worried that maybe that's a thing? Cause I didn't feel that way early in his career. Like, he was pitching good against the Yankees. He was facing the big dogs, but it's the recency bias in me. I'm sure of it. That's human nature, right? Is the two most recent outings have been big games and they've been stinkers. Someone talk me off a ledge here.
I already said I wouldn't have given him the opening day start after the wild card game last season, but not just that, like I said, I would have gone with the veteran that you're paying the money to personally. And I know, you know, every game is equal to every other game. So does it really matter who your opening day starter is? But opening day does have a bit of a different vibe, right? Than a lot of other games do. You know, your timing preparation is kind of thrown off by all that pregame ceremony and all the lights and this and that. You know, it is a different vibe. I've been there on opening day as a fan, but also when I had credentials, and it is completely different. I'm hoping that the with experience and with a bit of maturity comes his ability to maybe just dial into himself a little bit, and we won't, you know, he'll be an absolute beast during big games. I think it's, and what I'm saying is that I think it's too early in his career to make that statement.
Yeah, I mean, like, look at, there's been tons of pitchers that haven't won the big game, like, you know, like Clayton Kershaw, like, prime example, like, and I wouldn't classify him as anything other than an elite Hall of Fame first ballot sort of dude. Like, I don't think this one game or even like the wild card game is gonna define what Alek Manoah becomes as a Toronto Blue Jay. It's been a while since I've seen a young pitcher as mentally tough as Alek Manoah. Like, you can say what you want about opening day and about, you know, the wild card, but like, I have no issues with Manoah. I don't think he's going to be he isn't going to be the reason we don't make the playoffs this year. He's going to be the reason we
don't. No, that'll be Bo Bichette throwing the ball away at shortstop.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that. I have a few opinions on that.
All right, we'll save that.
Is that where the overreaction comes from, Garth? Is that where the panic is going to be?
Let's save it. Let's finish up on.
It didn't happen all the fucking time.
Let's finish up on our Alek Manoah thoughts, because
I mean, I've already said this to you, but I feel very similarly to Jen and Garth that it's just too early in his career to say that he's not a big game pitcher. And to top that off, the wild card game, the first game he's ever pitched in the playoffs. And I don't even really believe that game number one of 162 truly is a big moment game. It's just the first game of 162. I mean, they make a big deal out of that first game, but it is what it is. I don't know.
I mean, practically, yeah, you're absolutely right, but it is a big deal, or like, because they make a big deal of it is why it's a big deal. I just think that it is funny how narratives develop and how a reputation sneaks up on a guy. Vladdy, phenomenal player, has a little bit of a reputation of maybe not being the clutch guy that we'd like him to be. Still pretty early in his career, but has a little bit of a reputation of can't get it done when the thing's on the line. Now, there for sure are instances in which he does, but these are narratives that creep up on someone's reputation. So it's something that I'm going to be watchful for over the course of the rest of the season.
That raises the question, which is, do you believe in clutchiness? Is there such a thing as being clutch?
Good question. And I do 100%. I do. Anybody else?
Man, Ben Zobrist made millions because he was clutch.
Yeah. There are people who just will argue that there is no such thing as being clutch, right? There are fans and broadcasters who will make that argument. But I agree. I do think that there is a demeanor, a mentality, an approach, something that allows certain guys to get up there in really big moments and dial in and perform.
Yeah. I mean, you can call it clutch. You can call it mental toughness, whatever you want, but it's, I absolutely think it's a real thing. And some guys have.
Jose Bautista.
Yeah.
Bautista. There you go.
Yeah.
Great example.
Okay. Going quickly to chat here before we move on, I did want to just touch on a few comments here. Kevin says, I think we're freaking out way too much about one subpar start from Manoah. I'm more concerned about Bassett's start and no home runs being hit so far. So I'm kind of with Kevin. We should overreact about those things more so than the Manoah start. But all in all, it is still three games. Scott Carter says, nothing in the Manoah start looked scary. A lot today with Bassett looks scary. That's a good point.
Okay, Alek Manoah. Scott, you touched on it. Game one of 162. But his FIP and peripheral stats last year showed that he was undeniably a little bit lucky. Are we... Temperature check on an expected regression from Alek Manoah.
What do we mean by regression? Because regression... He had a 2.24 ERA last year. If he regresses, yeah, so
2.25 or worse,
that could easily be a 2.7 with more innings. Like, but he pitched 196 innings last year at a 2.24. So there is bound to be a little bit of regression because, as most things are, you're young in the league. Hitters will adjust to you, and you have to adjust back. And it's just a matter of how he adjusts to them, and vice versa. And it just keeps going and going and going. But yeah, he's going to regress, but it's not going to be a regression to where he's last year, Jose Berríos. It'll be a regression. He'll still be one of the best pitchers in baseball. So I'm not that worried about him.
Fair enough. Then let's, and if anybody else has nothing to add on Alek Manoah, we can move on.
Hey, I agree with everything Connor just said. I feel very similarly.
Yeah.
Is he going to regress from being voted the number three Cy Young candidate? Probably. but does that mean that we're in for a rough season from him? Absolutely not.
Okay. Yeah. What if he has mid-3 ERA? What if he gives 180 innings and like a 3.5 ERA? Are we going to be frustrated by that? Or are we going to be like, no, that's good? Because I'd be frustrated by that.
I was just going to say, if there's a guy in the MLB who's getting lucky and he pitches in the AL East, he's probably pretty good. So, you know, and
it's gotta be good to be lucky, right? 3.5.
Yeah, if he has a 3.5 ERA during the season, I'll save my doubts for how he performs in the playoffs.
I think if he did have a 3.5, I think the level of panic would be more with a 3.5 compared to how everybody else is. Because if he's a 3.5, but Gausman's like a 2.7, Kikuchi's like right with him at like 3.4, and Barrios is like a 3.6, that's when the panic sets in. But if he's one of the better pitchers on the staff, which it'll probably be a problem if he's a 3.5, we'll be fine with it. So it's not about Alec. It's more about how everybody does.
I do not want to watch a season in which Yusei Kikuchi has a better season than Alec Manoah. Hey,
if it means playoffs, I'll take it. Kikuchi Cy Young for all I care if Alec Manoah's bad. Like,
I even put $10 down.
I'm confident in Kikuchi, but not that confident.
I put $10 down for Kikuchi to win the Cy Young. $10. And if I win, I make $1,000.
On my podcast, I said I had a hot take of Jose Barrios being top 10 in AL Cy Young, and I'm sticking on it. So I gotta have faith in him.
All right. Well, let's move on then, and let's talk some real fun stuff. What is going on with Bo Bichette?
Same.
Anybody can
was.
Jump in and insert this.
I was gonna say it's the same. It's the same as it ever was. Like.
He can't throw. Like, even today, he didn't have any errors, but he had two balls that almost pulled Vladdy off first base. In the first game, he should have had three errors, but luckily he got two, or one error, but one. He could have easily had three. Like, there needs to be a serious discussion going forward about what they are going to do with their shortstop defense. Like, he's got all the range in the world. Bo is a great athlete. He can get to anything. But it's almost at the point where, is it the yips? Like, he can't throw back. He can't hit first. He can't hit Vladdy's glove. Like, you remember when Jose Reyes played with the Jays, and every ball that was hit to him, you were just like, oh, it's going to go through his legs. And it did, like, most of the time. It's getting to that point with Bo, like, every throw he makes. It's like watching Cavan play third. Like, sorry, Connor. Sorry.
No. Trust me. I was just as terrified as you were, as everybody else.
I have that same gut feeling every time Bo has to make a throw. And it's just, they can't keep allowing this to happen. Like, they just can't. If you want to be a competitive team, like, something has to break.
This is my big concern too. And you really nailed it there, Garth, with the throwing, because I know everyone keeps saying, well, move him to third, move him to second. You know, like, people even were talking like when Chapman goes, you know, maybe that's the move to move him over to third. But it's between his ears. Like you said, like, maybe it is the yips, like, cause he can get to every ball. Like that first error of the year when he made it in the first inning, right, of game one of the season.
Yep.
All he had to do was hold the ball, right? Like, but he gets in this moment where he truly believes, I think, that he can make the play, or he's trying to prove everyone wrong. I don't know what it is, but it's just like the baseball decisions he makes drives me nuts. So will he stop making those throws from second or third? I don't think so. So is Bo Bichette a DH? Like, now we're getting ridiculous, I know, but like...
it's accuracy. Oh, it's just like flat-out accuracy. Like, he is so wild. Like today, he pulled Vlad off the bag with two throws today. And like, they were both outs, luckily, but they could have easily not been outs, you know? Like, just a fraction of an inch here or there. Like, when you see Matt Chapman, like, I know Chapman had an error this weekend, whatever. I'm not worried about him. When he throws, Vlad puts his glove out and it hits dead center every time. With Bo, it's like, you don't know. And yes, we've improved our defense all around the field. Our defense in the outfield is awesome. our defense at third. We have a Gold Glover at first. We have three dudes that can, you know, flash a leather at second. But the most important defensive position that we have is a guy that is about as erratic as any other shortstop in the league. So
what's the solution? Like, I at this point, I'm like, where do you even put Bo? Like, can you move him to second mid-season? Or is this something that we're dealing with until 2024? Because even if you look at that second base position, and we're going to talk that a little later in the show, it's already a pretty busy spot, right? Like, there's already three dudes there doing, as Adam so eloquently put, the merry-go-round, right? Between Merrifield and Biggio and Espinal. Do we need a fourth second baseman? I don't know.
There's a guy that everybody wants up. He's in AAA right now, and he does play shortstop. So there's
that's that true.
We have two of them.
Yeah, we have two of them.
We have two guys in AAA right now. Like Barger, the guy hit another bomb. You know, the guy's playing great. Otto Lopez is a plus defender at shortstop.
Was I the only one that was shocked that Otto didn't make the team?
Yeah.
And it was
I thought he was going to be over Lucas. Yeah. Or Lucas. But I don't know. Like, I've seen it before. Like, I remember when I was a kid watching Chuck Knobloch, when he got traded, in Minnesota, he was a Gold Glove all-star second baseman. Like, he was maybe the best second baseman in the American League. He got traded over to the Yankees, and he could not hit the broadside of a barn, and they had to pull him. Like, that was the end of his career because he could not throw to first base. Like, it was like, I'm not saying it's that far gone yet, but I mean, you cannot have two or three plays every game where your first baseman bails you out or you airmail it into the dugout. Like, you just can't. Not at that position, not at shortstop.
Lewis, do you think there's any way that Bo Bichette gets moved from shortstop in the 2023 season? You're on mute, I think.
So?
Yeah.
Am I on mute?
No,
you're good. Yeah,
I'm good.
You're just pausing for effect, Scott. Suspense really breathe.
I was just thinking. I think the answer is no, but man, you're in a postseason game. And Barger's maybe the guy going into October. Bozeman's slumping a bit. I don't know. I feel like those are the decisions you make, like when the games matter. But for now, he's gonna be given the opportunity to figure it out. I mean, he's been the shortstop for however long. They're gonna wait it out and see how he feels. But come postseason, I think a decision might be made.
I feel they're going to wait it out too. Connor, how about you, man? Are you feeling like they could do something?
I don't think Bo's ever getting moved because they had the opportunity to go out and get one of the 14 shortstops that were available, and they didn't. They went in and traded for Matt Chapman because you could have had Corey Seager. You could have had, at that point, was Correa the first time. You could have had Trevor Story even. And they're like, nope, Bo's our guy. We're going to go get Chapman. And then so I don't think he's ever going to get moved. But like Lewis said, just the playoff time. If Barger is 1,000 times better defender, and by all accounts, he actually is, and he's a lefty bat, so no one needs to worry about balance. Bo, I think, would be the DH in that case, but it's scary. We're entering scary territory, and we're in the third game of the season. Like, that's the one part. This is one of the few things we can overreact on and kind of be justified.
Yeah, but is it an overreaction? I mean, watched it all season.
No, actually, not anymore. You're right. Like, it's...
It's not just, oh, it's only the first three games of the season. We have seen this movie before, and it's the same outcome. We've had these discussions before. And to be completely honest, you know, especially if the Jays don't sign him long-term, and I've always maintained that I don't think that that's going to happen, if they're unwilling for whatever reason, whether it's them, him, whatever, unwilling to move him to a position where he would most likely better support the team defensively, then that's on this organization. I don't understand that, to be completely honest. You know, it makes me mad. I don't get to, I don't tend to get angry about very many things when it comes to baseball because it's entertainment, really. But this one ticks me off.
We have three guys in the organization that can play better defense at shortstop. We have a guy that's on the team right now, Espinal. He's a better defensive shortstop than Bo. And, you know, we have Barger, we have Lopez. Both of those guys are really good at shortstop. They're both really good defenders. Like, I get it. Bo is one of your superstars. He's one of the best bats in the league. But there comes a point where it's like, you can't allow that to keep happening. You just can't. Like, if you're serious about winning a World Series, you can't have one of the five worst defending shortstops. Like, I'd love to see the stat of, like, how many World Series winners in the past 50 years have had one of the five worst defensive shortstops in baseball. Like, it's a position that you can't dick around with. You need a dude there.
I'm gonna continue to be a Bo apologist, which is a weird place to be, but it is like something that's getting harder and harder to ignore. I mean, I really spent the off season really talking myself into, look, he's getting older, he's getting stronger as he goes. This is like the age 25 season is consistently historically an age at which shortstops take that next step. So I'm really looking forward to that this year. And yeah, three games sample size, but it is a bad sample size so far.
A physical thing, or he needs more practice at a thing, that would be fine. I don't think that is the issue. I think it's all between his ears, because the dude is a super athlete. We see it every day. Like, every day he'll do something, you're just like, holy shit, he's such a great ball player. But when it comes to throwing accuracy, he is terrible. And that is a very important part of his job.
Well, here's
he's had plenty of opportunity to figure this out.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, right? Yeah.
Here's a comparison that I want to draw, Scott, just to step on your toes a little bit. What would the Yankees do? Right? Because they went through this with Gleyber Torres. This is I think a perfect comparable here. Gleyber Torres came up, was a shortstop, made his MLB debut at age 21. By age 24, he was still shortstop, played 108 games at shortstop, made 18 errors. The next season, moved to second base, made 7 errors. And he's their second base now.
If
we're going to do what the Yankees are doing, then we move Bo to second and call up Barger. You know, they got Volpe playing there now.
I was going to say, they did that with Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and Anthony Volpe. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa started in center field today for the Yankees.
Center field today.
They're just trying to put him somewhere. Like,
yeah.
All right, Dalton Varsho is shortstop.
Because,
I like it.
Because during spring training, Bo Bichette made 0 errors. In fact, I was even at the point where I was like, I said on the cast, I was like, my prediction for 2023 is that Bo Bichette is an average shortstop. He becomes someone who is average at the position. And I don't know, I don't think it's going to happen.
Those games didn't count. That's why I think it's a mental thing.
Exactly.
When the game actually counts, you have that feeling in your pit of your stomach. You're just like,
look, this is what I'm saying with Alek Manoah. Is like, Alek Manoah, much smaller sample size, but this is where a narrative develops and it starts to become a factor, where Bo Bichette starts to second guess himself every time the ball's hit to him, because he knows everyone in the stadium is expecting him to throw this into the crowd, right? And it just can like snowball and spiral out of control, right? So that's like where I feel like hopefully we're not at the early stages of with Alek Manoah being like, big game, he's going to be gripping the ball too tight. You know, we talked about it with Scott, Mark Grepchinski, right? Where he was like not a lefty specialist, but then all of a sudden it started to just get in his head and it got out of control, where he's like, look, if I don't get this guy out, it's going to be 2 months before I face enough righties to get my my opponent batting my average back under control, right? So just that factor made him overthink and overgrip and overthrow every opportunity he did have. And that's where, yeah, where Bo's at right now is like, it, I mean, we saw it in that first game where he first inning throws it into the crowd. And then later in the game, bases loaded, ground ball to him. I mean, the conventional wisdom is go home with it. And he threw to second instead, right? And that just like a situation where he didn't have confidence in himself at that point, where he's like, I don't want this to become a highlight where I throw it into the backstop, three runs score, and it all started because I threw it away and couldn't make that.
Then he shouldn't be playing shortstop. And he should not be playing shortstop for a major league team.
What made
if that's your mindset, get him out of there.
What made that Bo play in the late innings with the bases loaded worse is because the next play, Vlad makes an outrageous play crossbody to get Tyler O'Neill going home. And it's like
a stark contrast, isn't it? I know. Yeah. We should get Vladdy playing short.
I was going to say, we all knew Vlad was not a great defender. He became a good defender, good enough to win the Gold Glove. So it's possible.
He didn't want to move off third either.
No,
remember?
He considered himself,
he took pride in the fact that he played a premier position. And when they moved him, not only is he a really good defender at first base, but they moved him and he was still runner up for MVP, right? Like his bat was still there. It's not like, you know, he got moved and everything came crashing down because, you know, he felt defeated over losing his third base spot. I don't know. I really don't understand why this is at least not been tried out in a game, you know, or wasn't looked at during spring training or something.
It's funny because honestly, when it comes to what we're talking about with everyone, and maybe this is unfair to Bo, I'm very much in the camp of it is so early in the season. We can't really judge everyone's performance. And I don't know why I feel it's different with Bo, but I do. And it's because it's the same problem that we've been talking about for the last 3 years. Right. So maybe he should be given a little bit.
It definitely has a here we go again kind of vibe to it.
Yeah. It's not, you know, like, yeah, I'm worried about Chris Bassett, but like, whatever, he could probably turn around. Like it's first game, whatever.
With Bo,
that's one game for Chris Bassett.
That's Bo a good comparison with Chris Bassett. The other comparable is if Yusei Kikuchi comes out and is atrocious in game one, we're going to have that exact same, oh dear God, here we go again, feeling.
It's happening again.
This is what we're in for, right? All the optimism is around Yusei Kikuchi, right? He ended the ball season coming out of the bullpen, pitching well. I mean, low leverage situations, but like the numbers were still good at the end of the year. Spring training, really he looked good. He's continued to like take all the steps forward we could ever ask for. But now if the one game that actually matters is atrocious, all that goodwill and rope that he's earned is going to get short real quick. Jen, go ahead.
With all that optimism, at least if I hate to put this out there, if Kikuchi performs poorly, it's not that unexpected, right? Like we saw it last year. If it happens again this year, then you're no better or worse off on that one position in the rotation than you were from last year. But if Bassett can't get it together, or if Barrios is, you know, not good, or if Manoah takes a regression, those are the things that I think would have much greater concern.
We don't want a regression from Yusei Kikuchi.
Going to chat here. Yeah, right. Hopefully he's already hit his low water mark. Exactly. Okay, going to chat here really quick. Scott Carter says if Bo was not as good as he is at hitting, he would have been moved from shortstop in 2020. There are different rules for players who are offensive stars,
but
they moved
Vladdy though.
Yeah.
True. Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know the answer.
And Vlad is their superstar.
And I mean, another example that I did see in the chat, they moved Lourdes Gurriel Jr. to the outfield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He came up as a shortstop and then had the yips at second.
He's not an elite hitter, though.
Oh, he's a good hitter, though, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, he's above average at best.
Do you remember why they moved Lourdes?
Yeah,
because he could not throw to first base.
He had the gimps.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's been fun. I'm going to go cry. Yeah, I don't know what to say. One thing that I did think stood out in the broadcast today, they talked about John Schneider starting Dalton Varsho in the four spot. And Schneider's saying, I'm sticking with that for a little bit. Like, we're gonna let him get comfortable. We're going to let him get situated versus lefties versus righties, whatever. He's our cleanup hitter for the foreseeable future. I don't think this is going to be a management team. I mean, they haven't been ever, but we're not going to see them make any rash decisions on Bo Bichette, I think, is me reading the tea leaves there. Is like, if we're going to just put Varsho at four and commit to, yeah, we're going to give him like a 2-month runway and just let it figure itself out and then make adjustments. We're going to do the same thing with Bo Bichette at shortstop. He's not going anywhere for the foreseeable future. So like, buckle in, I guess, is the advice we can take away from that.
And I honestly, I want to eat my words so bad. Please, Bo, make me humiliated about this episode. I would be thrilled about it. We could cut it up. We could, like, you know.
Yeah.
I am not excited about okay, let's just crystal ball. We're going into September. Bo Bichette hitting 300 and hitting 31 errors going into September. What do we do? Like, are we just going to seriously consider putting Addison Barger in
it's a little bit late by September to be making adjustments like that.
Okay. Well, I don't think it's happening before then.
There's a quick adjustment that you can make. It just say, hey, Bo, say that your leg is kind of hurt, so you just DH.
Yep.
Just do what you did with George Springer for 3 years. Just put him DH.
I'm just saying, I know Addison Barger, you know, the scouting report on him, great arm. I don't like the idea of having a rookie starting for us at shortstop in meaningful games.
The World Series champions did it last year.
Every third throw either.
The World Series champions did it last year with Jeremy Pena.
Yeah, Jeremy Pena is older than Bo Bichette.
Is he really?
He's 26.
There's no
way. Yeah.
There's way. All right, Connor, you fact check that.
Jeremy Pena is 25.
Oh, okay.
So he's the same age.
How many days old is he?
He's September 22nd.
And okay. So yeah, barely 25 at the end of last season. Sure. Okay.
Is more
my mistake. Okay. Still older. All right. Let's move on from there then. Second base. Should this be a committee position, or it feels like Merrifield's the guy, de facto second baseman, unless situation calls for, you know, Kiermaier to sit down and Varsho moves to center and now we need him in the outfield. What's everybody's thoughts? Should this be a by position? Should this just be Bo Bichette's job? I'm kidding. I don't know. Gavin Biggio. Dive into it. Dissect. Take it where you will.
I guess I should start because I have the picture of the guy behind me. So. It was a Christmas gift I didn't ask for, but I appreciated it. But I think it's a position by committee until someone of the three shows that they should be there every day. Because as of right now, it's going to be what we saw today. Against lefties, Espinal is going to be at second and Merrifield's going to go to the outfield. And against righties, it's take your pick on... If it's a soft throwing lefty, it's going to be Cavan. If it's just any other type of pitcher, it's going to be Witt. And as we've seen, they'll use Cav in pinch running, pinch hitting, which that decision in opening day was a little questionable because Cavan Biggio's one thing is he can't hit velocity. And John Schneider says, hey, go hit 104.
Didn't have to. Took a walk.
Didn't have to. But like, it's like, yeah, it's not a great decision there. But yeah, if Cav goes out there and just hits the shit out of the ball, which is a prayer at this point, he'll be the everyday second baseman. If Espinal does it, he'll be the everyday. It's just go win it for like the first, I think it's by the first month, by the end of the first month, we'll know who's going to be there the majority of the time.
I think it's going to stay kind of where it's at. Like, they're going to use that position to give guys days off like they do with the DH. You know what I mean? Like, it's like they have so much versatility there. They have guys that can play first. They got guys that can play short. They got guys that can play in the outfield, all at first base. So I think they're going to give Belt and Kirk a lot more run with the DH this year and use the three guys at second base who could all play other positions to give dudes days off. I think that's kind of, I'm okay with the way they're running it right now. Like, I don't want to see Espinal go in there and play every day like he did last year. And then just like the second half of the season, just run out of steam. You know, like I think keeping all of those, and all of those guys are going to end up with like 115, 120 games under their belt. Like, they're not, it's not like they're going to be sitting for, you know, half a season. They're all going to get their at bats. I think that like having a guy that can only catch or hit or be DH, or a guy who can only play first base or DH like Belt, I think having that positional versatility at second opens up those days that you can get Springer off his feet. You can give Kiermaier a day off, you know, like even Bo might need a day off. Like, you have those guys there to do that. Okay, problem solved. All right.
Fair enough. There it is. It's, moving on. Well, I mean, might as well, unless anybody has anything else they feel strongly about in that regard. Let's move on and look at the AL East, because the Rays have run away with the division. The season is over.
Cash your chips in now. It's like 2021. All right, we're going to miss the playoffs by a game.
Okay.
AL East. They did play the Tigers. They did play the Tigers to just kind of quash all the panic about the Rays. I think the Rays are going to be a very good team, but let's not jump completely off the deep end here with this first series of the year.
Red Sox beat the Orioles 2-1 in the season opening series.
It really shouldn't have been.
They should not have.
The Orioles, that second game.
Ryan is that the one where they dropped the final out and then blew it?
And then Duvall came in and hit a home run and won it? Yeah. Very
nice. Yankees are 2-1, which is frustrating given their pitching situation. Of course, they had a freaking rookie pitcher debut and pitched 5 shutout innings today for the win. So and Yankees continue to just
old friend Ross Stripling didn't help
be
us
good
there.
At baseball. Yeah. Okay, let's just start with this question when we're looking at the AL East. I don't want to put the cart before the horse and say the Jays are going to make a playoff spot, because I know that's the old jinx, right? But who is like the number one competition or the biggest threat other than the Jays to win the division this year? Yankees, Rays?
Yankees are odds on favorites, but I think the Rays are underrated.
Yeah, it has to be the Yankees. Yeah.
It's got to be the Yankees.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the Yankees, like I've said this a few times, they could get old really quick. Like one injury, Aaron Judge goes out for 3 months. That team went. They had about a 2.5 month stretch last year where nobody could hit, like literally nobody except Judge. Like, he put them on a team on their back, and like they would not have won the division without Aaron Judge last year. So, you know, and look at their superstars or all their stars. You know, you got Rizzo, you got Donaldson, you got Stanton, you got Judge. Like, this team could get old really fast. And their pitching's already banged up. Like, I don't fear them as much as I fear the Rays. Like, the Rays last year, it was just like, you could not, like, their whole team got hit by a bus last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, if
still we're a wild card team.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing to keep in mind when it does come to like odds on favorite to win a division or a World Series is skewed by the money coming in on those teams. There is 10 million people that cheer for the Yankees who are putting money down. And there's maybe 10 Rays fans in all of Tampa Bay. So,
yeah.
Also, having won it the year before is a factor. I would be worried if I was the Yankees fan. I think that, like you said, Garth, they can get old in a hurry. One, it's a house of cards. I don't know how they're going to band-aid their way through the first few months of the season with that pitching rotation.
Who scares you? It's Garrett Cole
and then nobody else.
I'm absolutely terrified of the Tampa Bay Rays. Like, 1 through 9, all of their hitters could be above average by the league average by WRC+. And then they got like 3 guys off the bench that that crush lefties or crush righties. And then if that starting rotation remains healthy going into the postseason, going down the stretch, it's unbeatable. It's unbeatable. Plus the bullpen, the 3 guys that they're going to, the submarine or the side armor and the guy throwing 100 from the top with a fastball that only drops like three inches off with gravity. That team terrifies me. And you're right, they got hit by a bus last year, but I think they might be the bus this year.
All right. Well, I'll
just the fact that they were not touted by pundits this year as like a watch out. Like, as soon as the Rays are off the radar, that's when they scare me the most. Like,
I they won 100 and how many games in 2021?
Like, it was like 108 or 110.
They went to the World Series in the last 2-3 years. Come on.
Yeah, but they don't have Kevin Kiermaier anymore. They don't have White Lightning. He's in a Jays uniform.
They don't have G-Man Choi. They only signed Zach Eflin, which.
They still have Randy Arozarena, though, and is he ever a thorn in my side?
Yeah.
Fun to watch, but not when he's playing against you.
They're my current pick to win the division.
All right.
They are your pick.
They're currently, yeah.
All right. Let's touch on new look baseball quickly. So it's still early, but stolen bases attempts are way up. Success rate is way up. Length of game is way down.
Unless you're the Blue Jays, because they've done like 3-hour games all the
today,
time.
Today was a quick one.
They had the quick one. I think
it must have been like 240, I bet.
Well, I know for a fact they had the
home runs left the park quick.
Yeah. They did have the longest opening day game. It was 3 hours and 38 minutes. Which not fun, but
how are we feeling though about the new rules? Do we like the pitch clock? We're okay with it. It doesn't matter. I mean, I'm just glad that I can't see it on the side walls in the backstop anymore. It's far enough up the foul line, I guess, that it's out of the broadcast view. I've seen some instances in which the pitch clock is displayed on the scoreboard and on the overlay.
Mm-hmm. I like that. The Blue Jays did it a few times in spring training, but I don't know if they've done it yet.
They did it in the home opener, but it wasn't for every pitch. So I don't know.
I noticed it today.
Was it every pitch today?
I don't know that it was every pitch because I couldn't bring myself to watch that game.
Fair enough.
To be honest, but
it only shows.
No, I did see it.
10 seconds.
Past 10 seconds.
Yes, at 10 seconds. Yes.
Is that every pitch at 10 seconds? It shows up.
Every pitch, I'm pretty sure. So sometimes we'll just pitch before they get to the timer.
Yeah, just throw it up every time. I like it.
I love the new rules.
I like them. I like the new rules, honestly. I really do think that it is going to make baseball a more enjoyable sport for a wider range of people to watch. It's going to be quicker. There's more action already. And I'm excited about these stolen bases. Honestly, I don't know the exact stats. I know that I sent them to y'all, but it's something like the stolen bases are up almost 35% from last year. And in the first 3 game sample size, obviously small sample size. And then on top of that, the base stealing attempts more are being successful. It's like 87% success rate to, I think it was closer to 65 last year in the same 3 game span.
That's very skewed because there was 49 successful attempts. Reese McGuire gave up 10 of those in 2 games.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I was saying with all that off season, you know, parking lot arm workouts, you know, should have been gunning those dudes.
They don't have Dollar Trees in Boston, apparently.
I love the new rules. I think the pitch clock is awesome. I love the stolen bases. I want to see some dude hit like 70 or 75 this season. Like, I'd love to see that. And like if you look
Corbin
at
Carroll.
Corbin Carroll stole 2 bases, and Will Smith didn't even bother trying to throw him out. Like yeah. Corbin Carroll is going to steal. I think he could. He's that dude that could do 70 for this year for sure. For yeah. sure. Like Will Smith is a very good catcher with a very good arm, very good caught stealing rate. He didn't even attempt to throw at Corbin Carroll yeah. today. Like, I love it. And I just, it just feels like everything is still more tightly packed. Like the action is like, I'm not wasting an hour just watching TV for nothing. And yeah. there's less ads. I know MLB's probably trying to work a way to fit more ads into the game, but like it just seems like boom, boom, boom. Like I just find it's such a smoother product right now.
And it's more exciting. Like I want yeah. to see runs being manufactured, frankly. Yeah. That's a much better baseball game than you know, every run being scored off a home run.
Going to the
like, I really was awesome.
Sorry, I just want to jump into Ian Ross says the shift rules are their favorite so far. I haven't even noticed the shift rules because it's just been that, like, you know, back to normal, right?
Because I really noticed it in that first game of the year because like every hit was like just a little dribbler past some guy. Like,
yeah, that's true. Yeah, maybe it was all those bloopers were.
Those were all last year. Every single one of them.
I did notice that a lot of teams are still just shifting them ever so yeah. slightly to the right of the bag, which yeah. takes away the up the middle. Yeah. Sucks, but what can you do?
Teams. We're not seeing four outfielders anymore.
Well, yeah,
I honestly believed that we would never see 100 stolen bases in a season again. I really just thought that that was an impossibility in the game of baseball. That was something that just would never happen. And with these new rules, I'm actually like, you know what? In the next 5 years, we might see somebody who hits triple digits again on stolen bases, which is awesome.
Well, if the success rate's going to stay up around 85%, why wouldn't they run? Especially mm-hmm. when you got dudes like Corbin Carroll and Mateo for Baltimore. The dude's just yeah. a gazelle. Like, super fast. Mm-hmm. Like, those guys are... Yeah. And Baltimore, like both of those teams, their philosophy is to run. Like Baltimore ran all over Boston this weekend. Like it just seemed like get on base, steal. Get on base, steal. Like it's fun to watch. And I don't know. Like I grew up in that era of Ricky Henderson and Vince Coleman, you know, like just like watching Ricky Henderson, like he was a menace. I hated him. I mean, until he became a Jay, but like looking back at it, it's like apart from Tony Fernandez, he was my favorite player. I loved him. Mm-hmm. Like he just mm-hmm. he wreaked havoc on teams, and it was fun. I don't know. I just kind of miss that style of ball, and I'm glad it's kind of back.
It is kind of back. I don't know. Not to be like the rain on the parade guy, but I think no matter how easy it may become to steal bases, I think injury concerns are going to be the biggest factor that limits the number of. Stolen bases. Like Mike Trout is one of the fastest players in baseball. He's like top 5% in speed, even though he's middle-aged at this point. We're not going to ever see him steal the way he could, because just that risk of him jamming his thumb sliding into second is always going to be there. So I don't know.
Love to see it. I just like it could be situational. Like, do we need a steal? Like, if they don't need one, then he's probably not going to run, but Mike Trout can still steal bases. And if they're down a run in the ninth inning and he's on first, man, he's going to take that base.
Yeah. And we saw that even today that on the broadcast after Varsho stole, the Buck Martinez mentioned, yeah, they need to start manufacturing because they didn't get anything yesterday. So just do it.
And Mike Trout had 49 stolen bases his rookie season. He's had 4 in the last 3 seasons combined.
Wow.
I
wouldn't have guessed that.
That's crazy.
So maybe Corbin Carroll has a big number this year, but then once he becomes like a legitimate superstar in the league, they're going to take away his green light. That's just my opinion.
He might not take away his green light. He might just not do it.
In any case,
yeah.
If he's running all the time, there's, if they're worried about the bat is more valuable than the stolen base is all I'm saying. Unfortunately, I love it from an entertainment standpoint. It's phenomenal, but it's from like a business standpoint and not paying your guy to be injured and miss 4 weeks with a jammed up thumb. It is what it is, unfortunately. Okay, well, let's move on from there then and get into everybody's homemade topics that you guys have been crafting arts and crafts style for the last 3 days over the weekend here. So, Garth, let's start with you. Hot takes of hot takes. Give me something hot to take.
As of opening day, there were 10 Major League Baseball players who earned more than all of Oakland A's payroll. 10. Like, that is insane. I know that they're a small market and they have a bad team and blah, blah, blah. Oakland A's were profitable last year. They were in the, you know, they were in the black. They made money. You know, there is no small market team. Look at San Diego. San Diego is, I believe, the 22nd largest market in MLB. And, you know, they just casually threw Jake Cronenworth an $80 million contract yesterday. Like, you know, no big deal. You know, they got Soto, they got Machado, they got Tatis, they got fuck everybody.
Yeah.
You know, like literally whoever they want. So for these teams to keep playing this, we're a small market team, is just disingenuous. You know, they have the same, they make the same amount off of national televised, you know, contracts. They get their cut, which is the biggest driver of revenue. It's not, you know, hot dogs in the stands. It's just not. I know the players will never go for a hard cap, and the owners never go for a hard floor. So how are we going to fix this issue? Because 10 players should not all be making more than an entire team in this day and age. Like, do we consider relegation? You know, do we like, you know, in the football and Premier Football League, where, hey, the bottom two teams, one from each league, you get demoted this year and we're calling up, you know, some independent ball team. Like, I don't know how we fix it, but it's a problem that's not going away. We still have teams like Oakland and Cincinnati and Kansas City who miraculously won a World Series being a small market. But I mean, it's just, I don't know where we go from here.
I am so done with where the A's are at personally.
They shouldn't be a team.
They should not be a team.
Rope
is up. The rope is up, right? Like they've been given so much time to try and fix this. It has only become worse. I know Joel in the chat here brought up, he's like, the A's have a lower payroll than they did in the Moneyball movie 21 years ago. Like, that's asinine. That's it.
Ken Griffey Jr. is the third highest paid player in Cincinnati. He hasn't played for them in over 20 years. Like, it's insane. Like, these teams should not be allowed to keep just basically leeching off all the other teams, knowing that there's no way they'll ever be competitive.
And it's not like the owners of these teams are, in comparison to everybody else, the poorer ones. The Oakland A's owner is one of the top 10 richest in the league.
Yeah.
And just refuses to spend any money. Because if you go back and look at the last time the A's were in the playoffs in 2020, there was one player from that starting lineup that was on that team still, and it's Ramon Laureano. And the only reason he's probably still there is because he's really bad now and got PED suspensions.
Yeah.
But Murphy, Olsen, Jed Lowry, Chapman, Semien, Canna, Marte, like, all of them are gone. Like,
such a good team, man. Bassett, like, Manaea.
Yeah.
Irving, Bassett,
Manaea. That is such a good team.
Like, if you took all those dudes and put them on that team, if they kept all those guys, they'd be a force this year. They'd be really good.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just, they just don't want to pay it because they just sit back and collect that TV money. And I don't like.
Well, I think one of the problems
owners
with...
don't want a floor, but they like the owners of the big markets that keep paying, like they must be pissed.
The problem with it is, like, from a business standpoint, is John J. Fisher bought the A's for $180 million in 2005. The franchise is now worth over $1 billion. So the valuation of that as like an asset in his portfolio has skyrocketed. There isn't an incentive for him to be spending a bigger value, because whatever he gets on like ticket sales in the playoffs or whatever, it's like nothing compared to just the valuation will just go up. I'm just going to get to a certain age and he's going to be 70 and just sell the A's for $5 billion. And that $4.9 billion increase in his personal wealth is irrelevant to what he puts for a product on the field. And that's kind of just, I think, sports ownership in general. But
I get that. And I understand why he's doing it. But if MLB wants to grow the game,
it shouldn't be tolerated.
They can't
agree.
They can't tolerate this, and they can't allow 7 or 8 teams every year. Like, and I'm not talking about teams that are like rebuilding and like you can see where Baltimore is going. You can see where you can see where Arizona's going. Like, you can see where these teams are trying. Like, if you look at Cincinnati and Oakland right now, like, what are they doing? Like, what are they doing? Like, last, that's like, Sean even Murphy Cincinnati, trade. They were a couple games away from the playoffs, and they gutted that team. They kept, the only person they kept was Votto, because he's got such a big contract, and no one really wants to touch it. Like, they got rid of Winker, they got rid of Castillo, they got rid of, like, everybody. Perez.
Molly.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, I don't see how you can grow the game when you have fan bases that are being told every year, like, come to the game, we're going to be dog shit, but we're still going to take your money. Like, it's just a slap in the face.
Yeah, it's easier said than done, though, because they're going to have to do that if they want to do it through, like, a CBA.
I don't think they have it in them, to be completely honest.
They're going to have to get at least 9. Like,
look at how riled up they got about Cohen spending. All the other owners were up in arms about it. Like, it's just... like, oh my God, this rich guy who's a fan of the team wants to win? Like, oh, let's
chastise them.
Yeah, we can't have that. No. We need these billionaires to trade away every player that 8-year-old kid grew up loving, just to what? Make our evaluation of the team more profitable? Like, they need to do something to bring back fan loyalty, because you don't have a decent product without fan loyalty.
And they have fan loyalty already, don't they?
And correct, like, the A's fan, they're loyal to the A's.
All six of them, yeah.
They're loyal to the A's. They just don't go to the games anymore because they know the writing's on the wall. Like, they're They hate their owner. They know the A's are going to Vegas. Like, that's like done and dusted. Oakland A's are going to be done because that stadium is a travesty. Like, in.
And this is where enough is enough. Just do it already.
Yeah,
right?
Like, they've been talking about it for 5 years. Like,
Oakland isn't moving to Vegas, though. Vegas is going to get an expansion team. Oakland will relocate, but there's more money in it for the owners to have an expansion team. So until they can have someone like a Jeff Bezos type or an Elon Musk, until they can incentivize that guy to pay the expansion team fees and start a team in Vegas, we're not going to see Oakland move.
It's going to... They've wanted 32 teams forever. Just it makes it easier, you know, when it comes to scheduling. Right?
Yeah.
But why have 32 teams when we only have like 28 that give a shit? Like, you know, like what's the point of expanding when these other teams will never go anywhere? Like, as far as I'm concerned, the A's will never go anywhere with their ownership. Cincinnati will never go anywhere. Pittsburgh is never going to go anywhere.
Who is more to blame for the state of the Oakland A's, though? John J. Fisher, the A's owner, or a guy like Cohen? Like, do you think there's any level of just apathy of, like, what's the point in me spending $100 million? I will never beat the Mets.
I'm not saying he has to go out and sign, like, five Juan Sotos. But when you draft and develop good players, and the
which
second
they do,
which they do, the keep second them. That they deserve more than like $1.5 million, you kick them out the door. Like, what does that say to your fan base? Like Cohen is just he wants a ring. That's it. It's on him. He can spend whatever he wants. And once he gets that ring, who knows where the team's going to go? But with
Marcus
Oakland,
Simeon, Marcus Simeon is a perfect example of that because he was prepared. He loved that team. He was literally prepared to stay in Oakland for about 2/3 of what he could get on the open market. And Oakland was like, absolutely not.
The year before Chapman left, he wanted an extension. Him and Olsen went together. They wanted to stay together. They were like besties.
I think the A's offered Chapman like 10 years, 100. I think they offered Chapman like 10 years, 100.
Like that's, if you're doing that, you're just slapping a guy in the face. You're basically, why even like put that out there? Why even make that? You know, like it's mind boggling that they can keep doing it. Like, who that's honestly is an Oakland A fan that goes to games?
Last offseason. Nobody. That Sean Murphy trade last offseason should have been voided by the league.
That should not have been allowed.
It should not have been cleared.
No.
The talent going back was just not there.
They didn't even get the best player not named Sean Murphy in the deal.
Yeah.
The Brewers did.
Yeah. The Brewer. What were the Brewers even doing in that trade?
The Brewers got William Contreras and I think maybe traded Joel Pineapps.
For free.
And bringing up the Brewers is perfect because they are a shining example of what small market teams should be trying to do.
The Brewers do have that Corbin
Burns
Corbin Burns blemish right now where they basically blamed him for not making the playoffs in arbitration over $700,000. So,
at least they win.
At least they win. Yeah, it's like Tampa, too. It's like Tampa doesn't spend money, but they win.
And that's what I was just looking that up to see what the difference in payroll was between the Athletics and the Rays, right? Because the Rays are also relatively a small market team. You know, talk has been made of move the Rays to Montreal, right? Although, you know, that's not going to happen, but, you know, move that team somewhere where there might be a fan base. And, you know, they're 27th in the league in payroll. Their payroll this season is $56 million compared to Oakland's 33.7. So, you know, more, but not substantially more. And yet they're the team that we talked about half an hour ago as being maybe the team to fear in the AL East.
But they when they develop somebody, they like to keep them around.
Yeah.
You know? Like, they had no problem throwing cash at Wander Franco. You know, if it's the right guy, they will spend. You know, and they have the money. Like,
they will backload the contract and plan to trade him before it gets expensive. But still,
whatever. At least they do that.
Give him a deal.
Oh, I agree. I'm not shitting on
him. As a fan, I don't give a shit about backloaded contracts. I want my boys on the field. I want to see winning baseball. And if you're the Cincinnati Reds who get stuck paying Griffey Jr., $3.5 million 20 years down the line, so be it.
Well, we're not going to accomplish anything here tonight, but I agree with all the frustrations that's been said. I do. I wholeheartedly agree, but anything else anybody wants to add before we move on to the next depressing topic?
Great topic, Garth. I love that one.
Great one.
Yeah, most of my depressing one. I'm glad you let me air this. It's like therapy for me to air this shit out.
So Joel did the math on this. He's in chat right now. He says, the Moneyball team with inflation would have had a $55 million payroll. So it's like $20 million less than the movie right now, which is so funny.
It's shameful. But that's the problem with ownerships, right? Across the board is, except for a guy like Cohen, who's, you know, a multi-billionaire who actually loves the game and is just a little bit, right? You know.
Make that sound again, Jen. He's a little bit what?
But, you know, ownership, most ownership groups or individuals exist strictly to make money. That's it. That's all. And we all know that an awful lot of business people are incredibly insidious. And I don't know how to fix. I don't think Major League Baseball has it in them necessarily to fix this problem.
They don't have the will or the interest.
Yeah, they really don't. Because money's still rolling in regardless. So. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's move on to the next topic here. But you guys did mention the Rays sometimes spending money, and look at the backloaded contract they gave Wander Franco. Wander Franco, what do we have to give up to get Wander Franco after this 3-year Bobichet deal is up? We get Wander Franco? We want Wander Franco? Or
let's do it now. Let's
do it now.
Pull the trigger, man. Pull the trigger.
Be a steep
Wander can't throw to first either. He's got the worst shortstop arm in baseball, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, hey, there you go. Bo's 29. There you go.
His arm strength is.
All right.
got the Trevor Story arm.
All right, Connor, let's go with you. What's your homework assignment for us?
I mean, it's great because we're talking about the growth of baseball, and we all loved every Friday night having to watch the Blue Jays on Apple TV, right? Well, at least it was free. Well, they announced it's not free anymore.
Which we all saw coming.
You have to get Apple TV, and it's behind the paywall now. So one of the games that I did notice, Yankees Blue Jays, coming up in a couple weeks. We can't watch that unless you illegally stream it. So my topic was more of a combination of what, like, continuation of what Garth was saying about the growth of baseball. It's just, how do we go 3 steps forward with the rules and then still have things like blackouts, and you still have people that hate the bat flipping and all that stuff, and the World Baseball Classic is meaningless because people show too much emotion, and it's just like, where is the middle ground in all of this?
I don't think there needs to be a middle ground. Like, all those people that are like, oh, I hate bat flips, and you're messing with the integrity of the game, they're all going to die out. I'm not worried about them. We have to attract, like, how do we attract 8-year-olds? Like, I was 8 when I fell in love with baseball. You know, like, how do we get those people? I don't care about attracting 45-year-old men or 62-year-old women. I don't care about that. You know, Adam and I had a really good chat about this during the offseason, where I guest hosted one day, and we talked about, like, things that we could do to make the game better. And blackouts was it's right up there.
Number one.
It's stupid. If I want to watch the game, let me watch it. Let me watch it. You know, like, you don't make, like, the more eyes on it, even if they got it for free, all the ad revenue that the people are making off it. Like, I just want, like, when I used to play in bands, I didn't give a shit if they charged anybody for tickets, because I wanted people in there, because I made my real money when I sold t-shirts or I sold a record or stuff like that. You know, like, I want eyeballs. It doesn't matter. You know, and it's the same with a retail shop. You want people in the door. And, like, if we keep the door locked, we're not going to get those new fans, those new customers.
And just a quick point about the blackout. They made a big deal about the Field of Dreams game, but then that area of Iowa, they can't get the Cubs, the White Sox, the Reds, the Royals, and I think one other team.
There's 6 teams.
Teams that you cannot watch if you live in Dyersville, Iowa, which is ridiculous.
And I'm pretty sure Iowa has no Major League Baseball teams.
No, and I think they maybe have a minor league team. Like,
yeah.
So, maybe. Yeah, it's just sad. And also, people are paying upwards of $150 for MLB TV, like myself, and I can't watch the Blue Jay game on MLB TV. I have to pull up Sportsnet to do that, even though I'm paying $150 to watch my favorite team. Like, it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. Going to chat here real quick. I know Michelle Marie Beer says, I already pay for Apple TV and I still won't watch the game on it.
It doesn't help that their broadcasts are terrible too. Like, it's,
oh my God.
It doesn't. Ian Ross says, I fell in love with the game of baseball as a kid, watching the Saturday and Sunday CTV games and waiting to see if Dave Steve would pitch a no hitter or not. Yeah. I'm in that category too, Ian.
So for this is a total aside, but Field of Dreams game, if the whole theme is father, son, shouldn't the Jays play in it?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, probably.
The like, Bloodlines team, yeah.
Just tossing four. That out there. That's number one. Garth, the thing is you're not going to attract kids to watch baseball if you're if their parents aren't watching. Right? Like no 8-year-old is going to just say, I want to watch a baseball game if that's not something that they've already been exposed to through their parents, most likely.
No, that's completely true. But like I know when I was 8 years old, if I saw a dude like Jazz Chisholm roll up and like bat flips and swag, he would have been my favorite player, bar none. Like these are the types of people that I want to see. Like those are the guys that are going to grow the game.
Absolutely. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I know you said you didn't care about attracting the adults, but the adults have to be watching.
The adults have to watch
for the younger for the kids to be watching. That's my only point there. I won't be watching the games on Apple TV. I don't have a subscription and I absolutely refuse to go that route. I can listen on the radio or just miss the game that night. That's fine. Yeah. I mean, whatever. Again, it goes back to revenue and money and whatever the deal is that they have with Apple TV and whatever the league is making off of those games for whatever reason is more valuable to them than growing the game.
And my biggest concern with this is how big is this pie going to get and how often is it going to get sliced up? Like, yes, right now Apple TV has a slice of the pie and we're going to miss out on 2 or 3 games, maybe half a dozen. But when do they, Peacock's getting involved and they've got a streaming service coming out. And then like how many times is Major League Baseball going to sell for billions of dollars the rights to these games and then force us, the viewer, to either buck up and buy a subscription or not see the game? And how do you grow baseball?
That's the thing. Baseball cannot grow the game when they don't give a shit about the fans. When you care more about sponsorships and like the TV contracts and you don't care about the fans, they're going to be disinterested. They're just going to lose interest.
But what does growing the game mean? Because from a Major League Baseball standpoint, growing the game probably means revenue generation. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not saying that that's what it should be,
but it's going to get to the point where people just aren't going to care. Like I talked about Fanatics on a big Twitter thread a couple weeks ago, and they are the only MLB licensed product out there now. They own like every jersey, even if it has a Nike swoosh on it, Fanatics makes it. Everything that's licensed, Fanatics makes. Baseball cards now are completely owned by Fanatics. They own Topps. They own the rights to Panini now. So that's it. Like they're the only ones that have a license, like for baseball cards. Like they own everything.
And
it's gotten to the point where it's shit. And card sales are bombing. Merch sales last year were down substantially, like 11% last year, because they don't have to put out good quality stuff. Like I'm all for a bunch of different broadcasters. I'm fine with that. But like if you own an MLB subscription, you should still be able to watch every game. Like, I don't understand why you can't.
Yeah. And just to quickly say something else about the Fanatics, has anybody noticed that when there's a patch on certain players' sleeves that says debut, and that's a Fanatics driven thing. So they take that and they'll put it in a card that's one of one that makes that more, it's dripped onto the field. Now so that's
you see it like I'm kind of stopping buying new cards right now. Like I love collecting baseball cards, but I'm out because Fanatics has the monopoly and the cost of everything is through the roof. Like to go out and buy like just a box of baseball cards now, it's like $250. Like when is it like you said, when is it enough? Because by making it more expensive and less accessible, they're not doing themselves any favors. Yes, short term, they will be more profitable. Long term, when no one gives a shit about their sport anymore,
That's somebody else's problem.
Well, that is a great point, Jen, that's somebody else's problem. That is the whole problem of MLB shooting itself in the foot, right? Is it's a bunch of old people who want their money now before they die, right?
Yep.
And Garth, you and I spent some time talking about this too, on how can we fix baseball. And the idea of Major League Baseball being so restrictive with their use of like highlights.
That's a huge one.
And a reason that they have to do that is so that they can protect the integrity of the brand value when they're saying to NBC, hey, look, you get exclusive broadcast rights of this footage, right? And we will protect it legally to make sure that if someone wants to watch that, they have to go to you. But, you know, if you look at other industries like the video game industry and with services like Twitch, you know, there was a point in time where you needed to be like an approved gaming partner to play Fortnite and show that footage on your stream. And then the video game companies, because they're young and hip, realized that if we just let everyone play and show footage of our game, that's like the best advertising we could ever ask for, right? To just have 1,000 of the coolest young people playing our video game and showcasing how much fun this game is to 1 million people on Twitch every day. Invaluable. Right. And that's where MLB needs to. Yeah. And MLB needs to recognize that too, is that, yeah, let channels like John Boy and Pitching Ninja and whatever just show the content. Like every kid growing up who's 15 and has like a laptop wants to do highlight reels with commentary. There's going to be some kids that are really freaking good at that and are putting together content way more interesting than the MLB film crew is doing. And they're going to do it for free.
Jolly Olive.
Right? Well, there's so, like, so many channels we would list.
Adam, that Bailey at Foolish Baseball, he had a whole episode about all the hoops that he has to jump through to show baseball.
Crop a video, slow it down, put it through this filter, you know, flip it.
Yeah, exactly. These things, just so the algorithm doesn't pick up on that it's actual MLB baseball. And it's like, would I rather watch Bailey's videos or watch, I don't know, Mark DeRosa and Lauren Shahadi break down something every morning on MLB baseball? Like, man, the stuff that content creators are making now is infinitely more appealing.
Not to mention, that's how the kids get interested, right? That's how the next generation.
Like, I love it.
So we have our subscriptions to Sportsnet and to MLB and whatever, but the kids don't. The kids are just watching stuff for free on YouTube. So get in front of their eyes.
They'll watch that and then they'll play the MLB video game. Like I play the MLB video game. It is really fun. Like, and it always highlights it. Like, and on the cover of that, it always highlights some of the top players in baseball. Jazz Chisholm was on the cover this year. Shohei Ohtani last year. 2 years ago was Tatis. Like they advertise the top and most fun guys to watch. And it feels like baseball itself is backwards in that for some reason. It's just...
Well, again, it's short-sightedness on the owner's part, because that is an approach that pays off 20 years from now when they're all dead.
Yes. We're 2 for 2 in depressing topics. I apologize. Yeah.
All right. Anybody have any like pets that have been run over recently that you want to talk about, or anything to just kind of cheer us up from those last topics? Lewis, let's go with you.
Podcast about baseball, where all we talk about is how shit baseball is. Yeah.
but hey, you say Kikuchi is gonna be great.
All right. Lewis, let's go to you. What's your what's your cheery topic?
My topic was, well, I'm getting sick of the AL East, and I'm getting sick of the AL Central. The winner of that division getting into the postseason above some other teams and some other divisions that deserve to be there. And I was wondering what the thoughts are on breaking up the divisions, just splitting it into AL, NL, and whoever the top six teams by winning percentage or however many teams make the postseason now, make it to the postseason, seed it like that, no questions asked. What are your thoughts?
Like a fully balanced schedule? Like there's just two leagues, no divisions at all?
Just two leagues. I think you play the teams within your, like, closer to you more, slightly more often than teams, you know, down in the Central. But you don't have to worry about facing the Yankees every Tuesday.
I think that the way that – and I do think a realignment is coming in baseball, although I do think it's going to take expansion to happen first. And then what they'll do is they'll disband the leagues altogether and go conferences or however you wish to do it. And probably what, four divisions in each conference. Mm-hmm. And so it's just the top one in each. I don't know. Like I do think a realignment's coming, and oh man, I can't wait for it. Like I'm with you, Lewis. Like the sooner we can break up this AL Central and AL East would be amazing, because it is so frustrating. And I this isn't just from Jays fans. I know for a fact that if you're a Red Sox fan, if you're a Yankees fan, if you're a Rays fan, or you're an O's fan, this is just a really frustrating division to then look to the Central and be like, what is going on there? Like, why can't we be there playing the Tigers? And you know, like this anyways, but yeah, I do think a realignment's coming.
I agree. I think it's long overdue, and it, you know, you really should want your top teams being featured in the playoffs, right? Like your top teams across, you should not have teams that have a lower winning percentage than certain other teams making the playoffs. That's just not, that's not good for the game either. So.
Well, I think it's going to end up, because we're going to get to 32 teams sooner than later. I think within the next 5 years, so we'll be 32 teams. It's coming. They wanted it forever. So then, okay, you have 16 in each, like, conference. We don't have the DH anymore, so there's no difference between NL and AL.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. Like, it's completely different. So you could, you know,
so
you could
realign it geographically. Exactly.
Man, you can make the division so much more, like kind of have a balanced schedule, but, you know, just keep a division. Like, you play in your division, you play them maybe twice as much as you play all the other teams put together, and make them like legit rivalries, like Yankees Mets, put them in the same division, you know, but like the top eight teams from each conference play in the playoffs, something like that. But yeah, like located geographically, like how awesome would it be, like San Fran, Oakland, or White Sox, Cubs, like,
yes,
build Jays, Tigers every 2 weeks.
Yeah, Jays, Tigers, and Nationals, and Orioles. Jays,
Tigers, like, that was my rivalry growing up. That was my rivalry, was the Tigers, because they were in the AL East. Yeah. Like, they could do so much with, like, two 16-team conferences. And then for the postseason, top eight teams make it from each conference.
Yeah, the more that I'm thinking about it, geographically, the divisions don't really make sense. Because
why is Tampa? Why are we playing Tampa?
Why are East with Tampa, and then, but there's teams that are in the NL and AL Central that are like more close to up. But yeah, essentially what Lewis is saying is what the NBA did before they had all the play-in tournament stuff. The divisions were there and you played those guys more, but if your division was bad and you, like, the best team was maybe the seventh best team in that league, then they'd be the seventh best team in that league and only one would make it.
And this should be a rule of thumb for baseball in general. Do what the NBA does. Like,
minus that play-in.
The NBA is.
By the way, big thank you to Scott Carter, who sent us $6.66 here.
Yay, Scott!
A little Iron Maiden fan, right? Number of the Beast. There we go.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm gonna be so happy when we're in a division with the Pirates, the Nationals, and the Tigers. It's gonna be great.
It was Paul Beeston's doing, though, was it not?
It was Paul Beeston, because we were in a division with the Tigers. Yeah, like
there was a whole. Jays didn't have to be, and that's
It was about money, because you got to play the Yankees and the Red Sox.
Which is what it's always about.
I don't know. I might be alone in this, but I like the division rivalry aspect. Like,
there'll still be division rivalry. That's the whole thing.
There'll be rivalries. Just
divisions will be different.
It's just that the White Sox won't play.
You're never gonna convince me to have a rivalry with the Pittsburgh Pirates. I'm never gonna tune into a Pirates Jays game and go,
try.
Ooh, here we go. Big match against the Tigers.
I'll hate O'Neill Cruz all I want for 20 games.
But that's beat him 18 times. We used to have a rivalry with Detroit. They were our biggest rival for the first 25 years of being like the Jays being a team. The Tigers were our rival. And now, like, It's nothing. It's enough. A nothing game.
Fair yeah. enough.
It's like that's still a home
game. Whoever's in your division will be your rival.
I'm gonna hate the Yankees no matter.
You will learn to hate
the Yankees. But the Yankees are an exception.
Yeah.
You're gonna hate the Yankees because it's the Yankees. Yankee League.
All right. Well, I feel better. This was a much cheerier topic.
Yeah. Let's be real. If the Orioles weren't in our division, would we really hate them?
No. Wouldn't care.
A really exciting team. Like, it's just you gotta see them 20 times.
All right. Speaking of that, I'm going to do a quick one and then we're going to get to Jen's topic. Who's your second team? Everybody's got to have a second team. I'm going with the Diamondbacks. Maybe that's the Gabriel Moreno fan in me, but I'm going to cheer for the Diamondbacks this year.
I mean, I'm showing it.
Oh, got the Moncada jersey.
Yes.
Nice.
Yep. White Sox.
I'm going with, I like what Arizona's doing. Man, they got some dudes down there. Like I'm all in on Corbin Carroll. I think he's the runaway rookie of the year. I think he's the next true superstar in this game.
Already paid him too.
Yeah, he's gonna be there for a while. Like I'm all on board with what Atlanta's or Arizona's doing. Everybody on that team is like super fast.
Everybody who's talking about moving Bo Bichette to second base. But you're glad we didn't pay him like a true superstar shortstop now, hey?
I never wanted to pay him as a true superstar shortstop in the first place.
It was mostly aimed at Joel in the chat. But all right, Jen, who's your second team?
I don't have a second team. And good answer. It's not that I'm Jays or bust. I like baseball and I will sort of, get interested in a team depending on what they're doing that particular season or if a player, like I watched a fair number of Yankees games because I was interested in seeing what Aaron Judge would do last year, for instance, right? I just, it was a storyline that I glommed onto and I enjoyed following through the season. So I tend to kind of more just see what's going on and see where my interest lies for a while, but because I just enjoy baseball.
I'm kind of in the same boat. I really just, I don't really have a second team. I do like the Brewers. Like I do enjoy that they are a team that they're small market and they'll go out and they'll spend in free agency to get baseball players. You know, they won't necessarily just bring a guy up from AAA to save the $7 million to go and get a guy with a track record. The Brewers have always been a team to go out there and grab those guys with some track records who maybe had a down season or something like that. I just enjoy the Brewers and their pitching is so good, but I also have zero emotional attachment to them. Like when the Jays lose, I hurt. When the Brewers lose, I could care less. So I don't know if that counts as a second team.
Got a lot of lists for Seattle in the chat. That's a good one, especially those any West Coast Blue Jays fans. That was my uncle's
other team. Yeah,
those aren't Blue Jays fans.
Oof. Yeah, they are. Man. West Coast Canadians like the Mariners.
After 8-1,
enjoy watching them lose.
After 8-1,
I enjoy watching them lose.
The word Mariner just
like a lot of people saying lose, second happy. Team is blasphemy. Don't disagree there. Joel says the last shortstop who hit like Bo with similar defense won 5 rings. He was talking about Derek Jeter. bingo from Joel. So there we go.
I loved your eye roll there, Garth.
I'm all on the Diamondbacks train.
Yeah.
All right. We got a super chat from Keith we'll get to here. Thanks for the donation, Keith. Appreciate it. So he says, with no DH anymore and we have 2 leagues, get a relegated to a B league if teams in the A league can't score enough runs or something. I hate the idea of relegation. It's funny to me, but I hate it so much.
Yeah, it's a little odd.
Yeah, I can't wait for the Diamondbacks to be 10-time B-League champions.
10-time B-League champions. Oh. All right, Jen, let's go to yours then. What's your topic of the day?
Very open-ended and probably more upbeat, depending on the answers, I guess, that you guys give, is coming into this season, what's aside from the Blue Jays or anything Blue Jays related, what storylines were you interested in following across the league?
I was interested in the will Beauchesne take a step forward defensively, and that story has ended, unfortunately.
That one's been written.
It was worse than the sequel.
I'm kind of interested in what Baltimore is going to do this year, because like they last year they were really good, and I'm like I don't cheer for them, but I'm kind of glad they didn't just like, okay, we're good, let's sign five guys. Like there's people, there's things called sophomore slumps, and I'm glad that they're kind of like waiting to see what they have in like Gunnar Henderson. I mean, I already know what they have in Adley Rutschman. The dude stays healthy. He's a Hall of Famer. The guy is just unreal.
He's terrible.
I mean, they got a lot of young players, and they didn't jump the gun in free agency. I think this year they're like they have money to spend, and their owner has shown he will spend. I mean, it's on Chris Davis, but I mean, he's willing to throw out contracts.
Yeah, not wisely, but he'll do it.
No. So I'm kind of interested to see the development of Baltimore, because like if three quarters of their dudes pan out, they're going to be an issue for us for like 15 years. Like they got some legit young superstars on that team. And I'm kind of want to see where they're at by the end of the year. Like was that hot streak last year a bit of a flash in the pan? Can they hover around 500 this year? Like, I'm interested in seeing what those young guys can do, because they got some dudes there.
I think
I'm really curious to see how this storyline with Teoscar Hernandez in Seattle plays out.
That was kind of part of it.
I'm curious to see how he does. I'm curious to see if he's the big bat that they so desperately needed. And I'm even more curious to see what happens after this season. If pardon me. What happens in free agency? How much does he get? Is he going to get $20 million a year? Is someone going to throw Teoscar a 5-year term? I don't know. Teoscar is kind of the story I'm excited about this season.
I mean, he's already had that great throw that hit off Mike Zunino's back.
He hit someone in the back.
It was a throw to home. It hit the runner at first in the back and just kind of rolled away, and No one picked it up.
Would any of you have given him that kind of contract? Like, let's say after last season, like, right? I can't imagine.
No. And he's started this year 1-for-14. So
I've never been a believer in Teoscar. I think he had one really good season. And I think he's a very valuable player.
Like, I think on the Jays, for the price that they were paying for him, he was perfect. He was great. But I mean, I can't see spending big money on. I don't think he's a game changer.
Arbitrators don't even like him. He lost his arbitration case this offseason.
Well, and like, what is he beyond this year? Like, he could legit just be a DH.
Yep.
Like, so I don't know too many guys that are getting 5-year, $100 million contracts to DH these days. It's just.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't happen anymore.
Wrong side of 30. I mean, there's just a lot of factors going against Teoscar. So I don't know. I'd honestly be surprised if he re-signs with Seattle. I don't think they're going to be thrilled with him the way they were wanting to be. I really strongly feel like we're going to end this season and be thrilled with how we fleeced the Mariners in that trade.
Who was it today? Was it like, I think it was Dan who brought up, like, we didn't just get Swanson. Like, we got Swanson plus the cap room, or like the
payroll, plus the money. Kiermaier.
Like, basically, we got Swanson and Kiermaier for Teo.
And a prospect.
And
a prospect.
A prospect that's in our top 10 prospects now. So,
I'll take that trade all day. So.
All right. Any other storylines before we end with Scott's?
My storylines was just, how is everybody that left the team going to do now? Like, it was more of just a continuation of the Teoscar one, because I mean, I know it's a couple years ago he left, but Robbie Ray is already on the IL.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Suck on that, Joel. He's
trying to play into more money.
Lourdes and Gabriel Moreno, they've looked decent so far. Raimel Tapia is a Boston Red Sox, which is, I guess, sure. He made that team somehow. Like, and he's getting at bats, and he's getting pinch hit at bats in the ninth inning of opening day. That's
as clutch as it gets, man.
There were a lot of people that were really upset about trading Teoscar and Lourdes, and I do think
I was too, but then I, after some thought, I was like, okay.
Well, that's what I mean. I think some of those people, that emotional attachment will be severed as this season goes on.
I think the fact that we had to move George out of center field, like even take all the other factors out of it.
Yeah.
Needing to move George to a corner outfield spot so we could get 145 games out of him was enough reason that we had to do it. Like,
I think,
and being where he was in his arbitration, being this close to free agency, it just didn't make any sense to hold on.
Who was upset about losing Lourdes never watched Varsho play baseball.
Fair.
Like Scott and I talked about him last season as a trade deadline. Like, hey, we should get Varsho. Like, I'm a big fan of Varsho.
And the catch he had in center field today.
Yeah.
You think Lourdes does that in 1,000 attempts?
No.
No, maybe never. Once. Maybe once.
One in 1,000. But like,
we had to give up Moreno. I get that. But we also have two of the top 10 catchers in baseball. And if we're not going to deal from a position of strength, then what are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, Varsho is a massive upgrade over Lourdes.
I think the shock of trading Teoscar was, oh, he just hit the two home runs against Seattle and you're trading him to Seattle. Yeah. And Lourdes, the shock of Lourdes was just, oh, you're including Lourdes in that deal? Like, because most people, because at that point, most people were like, oh, okay, it's going to be like Lourdes, Kiermaier, and Springer. And then you get the message that, oh, Varsho's on the Jays now. Okay, Lourdes is just going to be the fourth bat, like fourth outfielder. But no, he's gone now too. So that was the main thing. But yeah, after watching three games of Dalton Varsho, I do that trade 1,000 times again. Like,
I think Garth really nailed it.
Sam Moreno won't turn into an amazing player.
Oh, he will.
Of course.
Like, he very well may. He might be an all-star catcher for Arizona for a decade, but that's fine. You know, like, we didn't need him, but we needed a guy like Dalton Varsho. So
it's the trading from an area of strength thing, and exactly like you said, Garth. Right? Like, if you can't give up your prospect that from an area of strength you already have with guys you already have good term with, right? 4 years in Kirk, two in Jansen. If you can't give up a guy like Moreno for an area you need desperately, which is defense in the outfield, I was upset too when it first happened. But
one other name, just while we're on the topic of old friends and new fate in new places, Ross Stripling. Yes. Pitched to 5 innings and gave up 4 earned runs, including 3 home runs today against the Yankees. So there you go.
So 4 times better than Bassett. Okay. Noted.
Noted. All right. We are going to get out of here, Scott. You got one more topic for us to get to as we wrap up. But before we do, do we not start with Lewis?
No, it started with
him. No, I didn't have a storyline.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind. Lewis, we'll get to Lewis you first. And then we'll get to Scott.
My storyline was the Los Angeles Angels, because how they go this season, what they do this season at the trade deadline is going to send shockwaves through baseball.
Yeah.
Like, if this team is sub 500, Shohei Ohtani needs to be traded. And that's like the craziest thing to say ever, because he's the greatest player ever. I don't know how that will ever look. I don't think I'll ever be able to comprehend actually trying to trade Shohei Ohtani, because it just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make sense.
Like the Red Sox trading Babe Ruth.
It would be
the type of shockwave that you would see. So
yeah, I'm looking at this roster and it's an okay roster. It's much better than last year, but is it enough to get into the playoffs? I just don't think so. I think Shohei, knowing the Angels, they're probably not even going to trade him.
Yeah.
I think that would be a big mistake, too, because what you could get back is like dynasty-changing level talent in return. Whoever's getting him is like, you know, they're not too unhappy either.
The Dodgers are getting them. And the Dodgers have a deep system. The Dodgers did nothing this offseason to bring on money. You know, like they let Turner walk. Like they're gearing up for a move. And their only move is Shohei Ohtani playing for the Dodgers. Yeah. Like they have a farm system. They can be like, hey, LA, we have our 15 best prospects. You want them all? Just sign Ohtani. Like, well, as long as we can get a contract done with Ohtani, we'll give you literally anybody.
Yeah.
And that's a team he would sign a long-term contract with.
Here's what I would do if I was the Angels. If I was the Dodgers. Look, here's the thing. Dodgers, like you said, they spent all this offseason preparing to go after him next offseason, which is like exactly why I wouldn't trade for him. Because maybe if I'm the Dodgers, this is what I do. I go hard with my trade negotiations after the Angels, and I drag my feet until the last possible minute, and then I pull the plug once the deadline passes, and I go, oh, we couldn't get it done. We couldn't get the ink signed. Couldn't get the paperwork submitted. You don't get the trade. He's stuck with the Angels. And then you just go, we're just going to sign him next offseason, not give up a single prospect.
Yeah,
you know what? I want to change my storyline that I'm interested in to Lewis's storyline.
Well, like I think the thing with that though is there will be 20 other teams that are willing to empty out their system for him.
I don't know how you're
willing to give up Bo Bichette.
What's that?
Can Ohtani play shortstop?
I bet he could.
Yeah, there's nothing.
You got pretty good arm from what I've heard. I don't even know where the starting point for negotiation starts on an Ohtani trade. And what would the Angels want back? Do they want
easier this season because he's done after this year. Like if they should have traded him last year if they wanted like that haul, because they didn't do enough in the offseason to make it, like they didn't make any long-term like franchise altering moves this year to show Ohtani that they're serious. Like, they're just like, okay, we have you, we have Trout, fingers crossed, you know? They should have traded him last offseason. They would have got literally anything they asked for last year. Yep. This season, it's like, okay, we only have him for half a year, or like not even 2 months. Like
they'll still get a haul, but like last year was not the time to do it.
If it's going to be a deadline haul, it's like we've seen what those are now. Like they're not massive, you know. It'll still be massive. Don't get me wrong, but it won't be like empty out the farm system. Last year it would have, because that gives that team a year and a half to negotiate a contract. This year I don't know, man. I just think. If they were thinking about trading him, they should have did it last year. But
if
it's
he's as valuable as we think that he is, then maybe the Angels just spend the next 3 months scraping together every nickel they can find and just handing it to him before the trade deadline even gets here.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that's what he wants. He's going to get paid whatever he wants for any team.
He's going to want to win.
Yeah. Him winning the WBC with Japan was like the worst thing that could have happened to Anaheim. Like the worst thing probably. That could have happened to Los Angeles probably. Angels. Like
he's like, oh, winning's fun.
Like winning's great. Showing emotion is fun when you win. Like
yeah.
That's a good point there, Scott. That's a good point. Okay, we got to everybody's topic now except for Scott's.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. We are at 69 in the live chat, but only 17 likes. So. If you're 2 hours into this freaking live stream, give us a like. And if you're here and you haven't liked it, then just hit the down thumb. But hit it twice. Do it twice. You're so upset.
Maybe one of those people that's in the thing that didn't like it, just called me out. Great. Appreciate it.
Give us a thumbs up. Or if you're that mad about it, give us a thumbs down twice. And Scott, let's get to your topic.
Okay. We'll make this a quick one. So I don't know if you all noticed yesterday, but Josh Naylor hit his first home run against the Mariners of the season. And there was no rocking of the baby as he rounded the bases. Now, I know that he got a lot of heat for this, especially in the playoffs last year. But at this point, and I know this is kind of the comedian in me, but I'm almost like at this point, dude, commit to the bit. Like, if you're going to do it, like, do it. I don't know. I would be curious to hear what you guys think. And if you think that he was pulled aside by management and was like, listen, maybe tone her down on the rocking a baby while yelling at the pitcher that he's your son.
I mean, his manager is Terry Francona. It's probably what happened. Like, but I think, like we were saying, it's all about growing the game. If Jazz Chisholm did the rock the baby, oh, he'd be doing that for the rest of his life. And Jazz still does the Euro step. He does all the 3-point shoot. Just stick with it at this point, Josh. You're kind of known for it now. Like, yeah,
holy shit.
Yeah, I'm all for it.
And a little aside.
I love the celebration, man. Like I don't know if you guys know this, but I can get pretty emotional, you know. And if I hit a home run, yeah, I know, shocking. But I mean, if I'm a Major League Baseball and player and I hit a home run and it's important, I remember Goose Gossage just losing his mind when Joey Bats hit that home run and did the flip. Like, I'm sorry, man. Like, that's just where the game's going. And these people are, well, the tradition of the game. Man, like, they used to play the game barehanded. They didn't have gloves. Don't give me this tradition stuff. Games evolve. Society evolves. Yeah. What fans enjoy evolves. So, man, like, yeah, Francona probably pulled him aside and was like, hey, you know, tone it down. But, like, Naylor will probably be in baseball longer than Francona. So, like, man, just do it. Have fun. If you're not having fun, what's the point?
Yeah, I like it. I like that it's unique. I like that it's
his,
right? It's the same thing with, like, NFL touchdown celebrations. I like seeing Aaron Rodgers do his, like, championship belt thing that he does or whatever. Like, it's nice when a guy has his thing. And I think the rock and the baby is dumb, but I like that he has a thing.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you know, Edwin with the wing, you know, like, give me all that stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, the first time we saw the wing, we all thought it was stupid.
But the thing with the wing, he never took shit for that. Like, everybody else in baseball who did anything took shit from everybody.
Because this is pretty benign, let's be honest.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Like, they were upset over, like, the dumbest little things. Like, oh, he stared at the pitcher. What? Like, yeah, I'm hitting a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. I'm going to stare at the guy. But, like, Edwin never caught flack at all from anybody, and it was awesome. Because no one should even care. Want to celebrate.
All of this reminds me of the fact that we have yet to see what the Jays might do to celebrate a home run this season.
Yeah, right?
Oh, God.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be like, whew, finally. That's going to be their celebration.
It's gonna, I guarantee you, it's like, going to be from the home run's going to be from the most unlikely source. It's going to be Nathan Lucas.
I would love Lucas to, like, have some crazy home run celebration. Like, do it up, buddy. You've earned it.
Just doing the worm down third baseline on the way to home.
One small aside I had, about the Naylors is, like, that is one of the craziest baseball families I've ever seen. Like, Josh Naylor, like, elite MLB talent. Bo Naylor, like, is a major league catcher, which is crazy. And then the third one, Miles Naylor, still playing here in Canada. That guy's committed to Texas Tech. He's a serious ball player. I faced him. Wasn't fun. I got him to pop out, but after he hit a foul ball home
you're
run.
Like, but I did win that battle.
I did win that battle. He did hit a home run foul off me, but that guy is so good. And, like, it just blows my mind that there are three, like, legitimate elite baseball talents in, like, one family. And their brothers is crazy.
Yeah.
Well, very good. All right, we're going to wrap it up here. Before we say our goodbyes, I just want to thank everybody in the grounds crew for tuning in tonight. We hit close to 70. Here's my challenge. Share this or whatever in your Facebook groups and your Reddit forums. If we can get to 100 for next week's long toss, I'll get my hair permed. How's that sound?
I'm telling everybody.
I might shave it off the following week, but for 1 week, I'll get this thing permed. All right, there you go.
You don't look like Bo Bichette and get the headband. Like,
yeah, I'll have to. Yeah, Bichette happens, right. Baby. All right.
How about this? If we get to 100 next week, Yep. I'll give away this 1960 Warren Spahn.
Holy. Hey.
All right.
Whoa.
That's a all double right.
whammy. A perm.
A perm and Warren Spahn.
All right.
I'll give Warren away Spahn. A firm handshake. How about that? Like...
All right, Reese McGuire. Jen.
Hey. All right. I'm...
All right, Jen. Nice seeing you. I'm glad we're back. We're doing this every Sunday. I hope you're back again soon.
I'm thrilled that you said that and then threw to me. Thanks.
Yeah, it's the dirt bag in me. I'm sorry. What can I say? All right.
Despite that, I will be back.
Okay, good, good. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Right. Garth, it's been a pleasure as always, my friend.
Yeah, good to see you. I'm glad we're back on the whole weekly thing. I've missed it.
All right, Connor, promote your podcast. You're still doing the Flight Deck, right?
Yes, the Flight Deck podcast going strong. I was going to say terrible at math. I think 7-8 months now going.
Hey, nice.
I can announce this here now. We are, since the baseball season started, we're officially doing 2 a week.
Hey, awesome.
Starting Monday, we'll be uploading that. And we do still have merch available. I was wearing this like the entire time. Do you have merch?
Nice. It's
a Jose Barrios like boy band thing. We also, if you're a Cavan Biggio fan, we have the Cavan Over Everyone t-shirt that's still available. You can purchase that. But yeah.
You're and... like, we're having trouble selling that one.
Yeah. I'm seriously, like, hey, you know what? We're a strong but small minority of the Blue Jays fan base, okay? Because yeah. The man is getting, no, man already got guff on the second day of the season in back-to-back years. And he didn't, yeah. Like, all he did was ground out. But yeah, the podcast is going well. Just keep it up. It's the Flight Deck Podcast everywhere. You get your podcasts, YouTube, all that other stuff. Twitter, Flight Deck Podcast, Instagram, Flight Deck. We're on TikTok as well. Make clips there. But yeah, check it out. It'd be much appreciated.
Very cool. Thank you so much, Connor. Lewis, how's ball season going for you? You into your own spring training yet, or is there still snow on the ground for you?
I went down to Florida for March break, so that was fun. Played a couple games there, but just back in Canada now. Games don't start up until later this month, but you know, just still working. Thanks for having me on, guys. Sorry I was late, but you know, I had a good
time. No, all good, buddy. We're rooting for you, man.
Thank you.
All right, Scott, you wrap it up and we'll get out of here.
All right. Thanks everyone for watching. We'll see you tomorrow. We've got the Monday show, and Adam and I are actually starting early, so it'll actually be available. See, we're on mountain time, so we always do the podcast at 9:45, which, of course, out east is almost noon. So we're getting up super early this week to see if it makes a difference. So we're recording the podcast at 7:45. So hopefully it's out by noon Eastern.
Yeah, we're not getting up super early, like relative to people who have real jobs, but for yeah, stand-up comedians, us, we're getting up
that's way early. That's
way
early for me.
So. All
thank
right.
you, Connor, for the support. Yeah.
Hey, I'm,
thanks, everybody.
I don't know what sleep is anymore.
All right. Cheers, everybody. Thanks so much to everybody who joined and hung out in the chat with us. Talk to you later. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh, with a drive. Cheese and crackers.
Thanks for listening.